delusion. Becoming something else. The shaman begins by calling in guardians of north and south, shaking the rattle east and west. His feather stirs spiraling wisps of burning sage and sandalwood. The rise and fall of chant trancing him back to dreamtime. Drum beats calm his pulse. The darkened room deepens around a lighted candle. Summoning the spirit of the bear, his voice gains suddenly in strength. Eyes closed, he holds his breath, tracking his totem animal, which rises within him, claws outstretched, pulling from his body muffled sobs until he breaks into a full-throated roar. The heaving grief subsides. Release. Relief. Daylight reappears. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And next we have on the list is Dravid. The man's tired. So we'll skip over Dravid and maybe next week. And next we have Helen Kavanagh Roman, I think. And the second of your name, right? Roman? Raven.
Roman.
Roman.
Helen Kavanagh. Correct.
Breakfast with a hairy ball. Whilst sucking on my marmalade and sipping black tea, there from the corner of one eye, under the table I see, half bald, half dead, a dirty ball, yucky, staring, waiting, watching me, all worn and black, with patches hanging off, sitting, not breathing, lolling, seething, hoping for kickoff. So my toast I abandon and make squeezy face. Finished with eating, get out of my space. You silly old thing, useless and round, waiting for the boy from schoolyard to abound, rigged out in his gear and bouncing with glee. To simulate hero, one kick sets you free. You roll in the grass and are a slave to his aim. Dodge smelly little lumps for the sake of the game. You get stuck in long briars with skin peeling off. Happiness for hours, hair falling out. You land, he kicks. You bounce, he shouts. They score, you roll. Oh look, the pout. Let's go try again, you silently say. Come on, come on, kick with that boot. Give me life this fine day. I live for a goal, you work for a free. A great soccer team, small boy and me. So I catch with two fingers this revolting round thing, and straight through back door, let go with a fling. I continue with breakfast, and wonder at it all. How for one little boy, all happiness can be, is one horrible, hairy old ball. Thank you, Helen. And next we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Sue. A lot of trouble with a PC. And someone who's a Mac fanatic, graphic designer, said you would have no trouble with a Mac. So, but I just check how many people would prefer a Mac to a PC. Hands up. PCs are still in the majority, I think. Anyway, this is a really good workshop earlier about phone poetry, so this was found on my PC, or missing. three downloads. They altered my application, activated my archives, booted my browser, buried my broadband, bookmarked my bits, connected my console, captured my cartridge, clicked on my cookies, command-eared my cursor, dropped down my devices, delved in my downloads, documented my data, dragged out my driver, displayed my desktop, erased my errata, encrypted my emails, fancied my favorites, fumbled my floppy.
No.
Mary, please. This is very serious. Fragmented my fonts, firewalled my folders, gorged on my gigabytes, grouped up my game ports, hijacked my hardware, hacked at my hyperlink, hung out my homepage, hosted my hard drive, inserted my icon, interrupted my intranet, jellied my Java, jumpered my jackplug, keystroked my kernel, kneaded my knickknacks, logged on my laptop, labeled my language, massaged my poor mouse, merged with my modem, imagine it, please, minimized my monitor, muddled my memory, memorized my moniker, negated my network, networked my nonsense, opened my outputs, outsourced my options, plagiarized my process, programmed my printer, punctured my pop-ups, partitioned my password, queried my QWERTY, questioned my query, quoted my quandary, raided my right click. Recycled my registry, selected my software, sampled my startup, serviced my smart drive, scheduled my scanner, sentenced my shortcuts, trespassed my trackball, trojaned my toolbar, uncovered my uploads, underlined my undo, violated my version, vetoed my vectors, vented my volumes, warned in my window, winkled my wizard, X-rated my excerpts, yawned at my yarns, zeroed my zip drive.
Woo!
Okay.
I'm not sure what happened after that. Did the computer just crash?
I dumped it.
You dumped it, okay. And next we have Mary Corbyn.
This is another alphabet poem, but not funny, unfortunately. A is for acceptance, not in my dictionary. B is for biding time, watchful as foxes. C is for cleaver in my boxing of crops. D is for daring do, always my mantra. E is for evacuate, excrete, to defecate. F is for friend, your conjuring trick. G is for guile, submerged like a crocodile. H is for hoodwinked, or howl at the moon. I is for implement, it implies malcontent. J is for justice, sweet as a probed tooth. K is for knife, whetted and ready. L is for latitude, uncapped, your mouse. M is for memory, mine is elephantine. N is for narrow, but my vista is endless. O is for oasis, your well has run dry. P is for precipice, with the view to your liking. Q is for quell, to squash, squelch, stamp out. R is for reckoning, stalks like a panther. S is for scapegoat, for this one has horns. T is for toe, to hear the bell ringing. U is for underbelly, soft as an egg yolk. V is for visitor, and I have a key. W is for watcher, I am outside your window. X is for xenophobia. I am your foreigner. Y is for yesterdays. See how they wave. Z is for zero. Your first day in hell.
Beautiful. Two alphabet poems, one after the other, without a chance. Do you plan this? Okay, next we have Vic Noonan.
This is kind of about someone I was in a relationship with. This is about someone I was in a relationship with, and kind of about this, I think, to relieve me of feelings that I felt about the person. It's probably difficult to read, but I read anyway. O evil one with the vapor soul, drinker of my life's blood, you are not an earthly woman, a porcelain doll like dead living. You robbed me of freedom. You stole my dignity. Lying as easily as you breathed, you wreaked havoc upon my soul. Torn like Tamara from your demonic grasp, from the dying embers once more, a flame is fanged that will soon again burn bright. Phoenix-like, I have risen from the ashes of your destruction. Jealous of my human love, go back to the spirit world. I am free. I leave you to God. I let you go.
Thank you, Mick. Next we have Dominic Dudley.
This poem came about just before Christmas when I was teaching my first years about volcanoes, and one of them asked what the biggest volcano in the world was, and I wasn't sure, so I had to go look it up. And this came out. Reflections on the caldera at Yellowstone. Underneath the National Park at Yellowstone, where Old Faithful gives his regular ejaculations, lies the Yellowstone hotspot, lurking, waiting, building up pressure and rage, ready to unleash upon an unsuspecting world the mother and father of all volcanic eruptions. The volcanologists say the Yellowstone hotspot has erupted seven times so far, with seven caldera as reminders, all lying in a meandering line as the crustal plate moves along in its slow, relentless, tectonic way over the terrible, furious hotspot. Each caldera is a shattered mountain, each a memorial to a potential mass extinction, each a testament to a horrendous eruption. Some say it's 40,000 years overdue for its next eruption. But the US Geological Service, in all their official wisdom, say it won't be erupting anytime soon. But what would you expect them to say? It could blow any time, and if it does, that could be the end of life over a huge chunk of the world. Not really the style of government. The truth sucks. The Italians, in all their official wisdom, have recently imprisoned six seismologists for not giving strong enough warnings. But 40,000 years, that's quite a while to be waiting. Have we time to build a spaceship to somewhere else? What should we do? How should we react? Should we flap about in panic, screaming, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God? Should we keep calm and carry on, as all those posters proclaim? Should we live life fast and loose, like it's going out of fashion? Or should we just try to lighten the load for those who we care most about? One thing's for sure, there's no use in worrying. Not about Yellowstone, not about money, not about the government, not about any of it. Let's just enjoy life, enjoy being alive now, for what it is. Beautiful, fragile, transient, intricate, collaborative, mortal, wonderful, precious.
Thank you. Dominic, and we won't be clapping and going, oh my god, oh my god, before we've heard the next story, which is a short story by Conor McManus with musical contributions or sound effects by Michael Callaghan. Not sure what they are.
I'm not sure if it is a short story, but anyway, you can judge it for yourselves. Shootout on Winthrop Street. Just last Saturday I went shopping, looking for a maroon shirt, like the one Henry Fonda wore in Once Upon a Time in the West, in that next to last scene where he squares off against Charles Bronson. Now, Henry Fonda was a killer of men and a lover of women, and I thought I could be like Henry Fonda if I had that maroon shirt. Coarse cotton, high collar, stiff cuffs, poise. So in the middle of the annual shopping contest, I set out on a quest for that same said shirt. Bad move. But I swore I'd search high up and low down, leave no stone unturned, search every nook and cranny, etc., etc. It did occur to me, of course, that for all I know, good old HF might have been as gay as a banana with that maroon shirt. After all, maroon is just a few shades west of pink. But welcome to my world where the sums don't always add up. In fact, more often than not, they don't add up at all. And sometimes I have to cook the books, personality-wise, if you get my drift, where some old flames hold a candle, mine holds a blowtorch. Anyway, I tried French Connection, Gap, Pennies, Next, Fat Face, and Gentleman's Quarter, but could find no killer shirt. And it's getting late, and I'm in a rush. And I'm thinking, fuck you anyway, Henry. Maroon shirts mustn't be in this year. When I meet a solicitor I know coming up Winthrop Street with a big important head on him. And before he started to read my mind, I asked him what was on his. And he said he was thinking about a suspended death sentence in China. In China, he said, above all places. And suspended, no less. Now, isn't that an improvement? And I thought he'd know where to buy a Henry Fonda killer shirt to die for. But all he kept talking about was his hangover and the chemicals in the Guinness. And he said the missus went all out for Christmas and bought a new couch. And he spent Christmas Eve on his knees screwing down carpet grips. And if I thought that was bad, he spent New Year's in Kinnegad. And to top it all, he was in the middle of refurbishing five houses he got in the cheap and cutting the chassis off a 1970 Citroen DS21. Then he opened fire first with a rat-a-tat-tat-tat machine gun talking, talk-talk-talk-talking, da-da-da-da-da-da, shooting word bullets at me about the 1970 Citroën DS21 with its single spoke steering and its hydro pneumatic self-leveling suspension. And I hit the dirt behind the thought, and I was thinking, I had vintage copies of the Beano and Beezer from that very same year, 1970, February to be exact, unread, untouched and undisturbed for 42 whole years, secreted, hidden, and conceived beneath the stairs in a cubby hole in the glory hole. And like a dog in a well, I was getting over, and I got distracted by a bird in a doorway kissing the tattoo shop guy, and I thought, would she not wear something that fits her? But that wasn't my thought. No, the less the better as far as I was concerned. That was my mother interrupted transmission on shortwave, an intercession, if you will. That happens to happen to me sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I'm just walking along and my integrated auto-tuner scans for the nearest, strongest signal and flicks to the mother channel, all by itself. As you can imagine, I didn't go there with him, and as it was getting dark, and by now I was up to high dough and was contemplating the high B. And just then, from somewhere, like out of nowhere, a harmonica wailed and eerie death dirged down Oliver Plunkett Street. And time stood still, drips dropped, signs creaked and passers-by paused, and an icy wind blew, lifting coattails. And I'm thinking of a summary execution there and then in the middle of Winthrop Street. Two clean holes into that big important skull, spilling black blood as he fell with a beautiful thud onto the brick paving. Fear is the only darkness, I said to myself, and smiled a wry smile as Charlie B hung on to a long note, a prolonged note, that sounded like a wrong note. After about 20 minutes, the lawman let up and said, "You look like a man on a mission, it's written all over your face. Try sevens," he said. And how come I hadn't thought of that? So I did, and they didn't, but I asked the girl anyway. How would the maroon shirt, when I get it, go with a pair of tan shoes if I had them? It was purely a theoretical question, of course, and she said, "Edgy." And I saw "edgy" in big, slow, capital letters, E-D-G-Y, floating high, and left. Finally, I found what I was looking for in Madurn. So what? It's a big girl's blouse, but who knows the difference? Welcome to my world where the sons don't add up.
Okay, next I think we're back to poetry with Gal Holden. I'd like to do George Cohen's poem if I can. I've got it. So this is one of my own. What's it called? Fire in the Forge. It's the tongue and groove assembly. The rhythm moves relentlessly. It's ball and a socket, pop and lock it. Ain't no brakes upon a rocket. Ain't no friction here to stop it. We make atmosphere in vacuum spaces, blasting tunes to developing races, and carving moons with presidents' faces, and Coca-Cola's insignia. Civilization was here. And it was here that the motor stopped, when engines seized and cables locked. When movement ceased, the penny dropped. We faced the barrel, not the stock. Our engine block just weighs us down. Our star has set, we're over now. Ungraciously, we do not bow. We face the curtain with kapow. It's tenuous, the thread that holds the Montelisa sword. It's timorous, the shiver stain, the fire in the forge. There's another verse here, one thing. Forget it.
The fire in the forge, after the fire in the forge.
Acapella bombs and bullets burst. The vanquished is a victor whose blood flows first. And the silence of fist is a longer reach. The soldier is a teacher with hate to teach. An explosion is a scream in a deeper voice. A refugee is a king whose power lacks choice. A king is a poor man rich in gold. A poor man's bullet and a poor man's soul. It's tenuous, the thread that holds the Mokalisa's sword. It's timorous, the shiver stain, the fire in the forge. So ask not who your country has killed for you. Ask who you can kill for your country. Your country will not ask much of you, except that you do not ask anything else, except that you do not explore yourself. For they are diplomats on ziggurats, many hearts on mines, with obsidian knives and carving battle lines, and the borders on minefields. Distractions, the factions, the left and right, while in plain sight, the man behind the hands is spitting in your eyes. He's spitting in your eyes. It's tenuous, the thread that holds Democritus' sword. It's timorous, the shiver stained, the fire in the forge. One second, I can get that verse. We spiral dance, the dance of death. The ego draws its final breath, and as the curtain is coming down, the bell goes for another round. Because the straight-laced will zigzag. What's profound is what's real. Tear the face off your name tag. It's not how you feel. Because we live to learn, to love, to learn, to live. And we give to earn the gift we burn to give. And we live to learn, to live, to love. And we live to give what's given us. Thank you. Common folk, common middle. Where is our hope? our joy, our fiddle. How can we set out these dances of sorrow while working and wishing for a bright new tomorrow? Because the power of money and the power of arms have been turned against us to do us all harm. We must trust none of these soldiers, none of these banks, whose mission on earth is the preservation of rank. And then we must realise that there's no blame. The goodness and evil are one and the same, and the organised religion is the face of the slaver working against us in our honest endeavour. And last, we must look for the God in ourselves, because God's in us. God's not in chapel or verse. And when deep down inside yourself you meet up with your soul, sure you want civil rights and equality wherever you go.
Thank you, Rob. And we have about 10 to 15 minutes. I'm not sure, Madeline, how long is your story? Will you be able to fit it in before we're kicked out?
I think I would.
Yeah.
Do.
Give it a try. Madeline Darcy.
Hi, I'm sorry, some people probably will know this, maybe some people know the story already, but it's short. It's my second shortest story. So, and it's called Clocking Out. It was only my second day on the job, and the bus had been slow. I was in a right tizzy as I rushed along the corridor, afraid I'd be late. Just as I reached the clocking in machine, there he was, right beside me, the life and soul of the factory floor, or so he already seemed to me. "The new girl, is it?" he said. I said yes, shyly. I was distracted. I looked up and down the rack of brown clocking cards, and it seemed to take forever to find mine. Finally, I grabbed it and shoved it into the machine. Only a minute left. Nothing happened. I was going to be in trouble. Somebody would probably give out to me. "Feck," I muttered. He took it out of my hands. "You have it the wrong way round, you just," he laughed, and leaned it against me as he shoved it in. He knew how to do it right. The machine made a clicking noise, and he pretended to give the card back to me twice, which confused me. "Smile," he said, "it's not the end of the world." I had to leave that job. That's why I'm here in London. I'm on my way to work now, on the Piccadilly line. There's a trendy couple sitting opposite me. They have money and they're smart. You know it by the look of them. He has a nice shirt and jeans and the kind of shoes called casual, even though they cost just as much as Sunday shoes. She's wearing clothes that seem almost colourless and plain, but they're not plain, if you know what I mean. They're classy. You wouldn't find that kind of gear back home where I'm from. This man and woman, I'm not jealous of them. At least, I don't think so. I just wish I had a bit more cop on, that's all. I wish I'd known the things I needed to know in life at the time I should have known them. I mean, it's obvious those two people are well clued in, not thick like me. They'd laugh to think that anyone could be as foolish as I was. They'd be sick laughing to think that a curly-haired chancer who wore grey polyester trousers and patterned jumpers and worked as the floor manager in a factory could make someone demented with love. But I didn't know any better then. No one ever gave me the time of day before. I was crazy about him. "Torn between two lovers," he sang, going round the desks, checking that we were all working. "Feeling like a fool, loving both of you is breaking all the rules. He winked at me. He had a lovely singing voice. But I was the fool, not him. I used to sit behind a metal desk on a factory floor, just like the older women putting transistors and capacitors and resistors onto a computer board. Some of them were like strange small beans, shiny black and shiny brown. Some were like children's coloured toys, only far too small, of course. Red and blue stripes on a kind of fawny colour. Some were tiny metal cylinders with thin legs. I followed the map and stuck the fiddly little things in the boards until tea break, and then again until lunchtime, and then again until tea break, and then again until open time. It was a bit like doing a jigsaw. Sometimes I made mistakes because my mind would go off on a trip of its own. I tried not to make a hames of it. "It's a good job and she was lucky to get it," said Mrs. Buckley in the shop to my mother. There weren't many jobs around Aranavar then. I tried my best, but sometimes a batch of them bloody boards would end up in the skip and it would be my fault and I would worry about losing my job and what they'd say at home. I'd be dreaming of him, you see. Sister Mary Regina said I wasn't bright, but that I could surely hold down a job at Ace's factory if Mary Kelly could. Mary Kelly was a fierce pig altogether, but she knew how to do the boards. He was a hard case. He was an awful so-and-so. He was a right chancer. That's what they said about him in the factory. But I thought he was the one for me. I got the thought into my head and couldn't get it out again, not even when I found out he had a wife. "You're as handy as a small pot," he said to me when I made him a cup of tea at break time. Most of the other women on the factory floor would tell him to F off and make his own tea. "Don't encourage him, love," said Mrs. Mooney. I liked making tea for him, though, so I did. "Come day, go day, I wish in me heart it were Sunday, drinking buttermilk through the week, whiskey on a Sunday." He used to make every day like a Sunday to me. It was work I looked forward to, not the weekends. So here I am on the tube train. I have a cleaning job in a hospital. I'm on the night shift. While people like the smart couple opposite me are having after-work drinks or going to the theatre or to a fancy restaurant, I'm at work. I clean all night long, apart from two tea breaks. It's okay. I don't mind cleaning except for the maternity ward. I always feel sick when I'm on that, so I usually manage to get one of the other night cleaning staff to swap with me. That sick feeling, I hate it. I used to feel sick like that on Saturday nights at the Shamrock Ball, sick with worry that no one would ask me to dance. I'd sit along the wall in a row with the other girls making pretend conversation, wondering inside my head why I bothered going to dances at all, desperate for some man to notice me. Then the girl sitting next to me would be asked off, and sometimes the girl on the other side as well, and I'd be the wallflower sitting there like an own shuck, not knowing where to look. Only the drunken lads who came in late and could hardly see me would ask me to dance. That fellow who wore his Wellington boots, dance or no dance, used to nod me onto the floor. The girl from the town told me he wore nothing except his Wellingtons for so long that the skin between his toes had grown and his toes ended up all stuck together. The thought of that made me sick, but I didn't like to say no to him, in case the other fellas thought I was a stuck-up bitch, and then no one else might ask me at all. No more dances for me. My dancing days are over a long time now. I wish I could say the same about that sick feeling I get. Sometimes it doubles me over. I have to stay in England. I can never go home. I open my legs in the back of this Vauxhall Viva and let him do it. Let him do it. Just like I laughed at his jokes and made him tea in the canteen and let him belittle me when he felt like it. I did that. I let him put his thing in me. He put his child seat in the boot of the car before we did it. It hurt. I didn't tell anybody. How could I? Nobody said anything to me when I started getting big. Nobody said a word. All these long years later, I'm still scared. Someday, someone might find out.